Hi, everybody. Before we get into this full disclosure on Minari, I wanted to take just a moment and welcome to the Front Row Network, Ethan and Kimmy. These two are going to do some great work for the network. We've always wanted to highlight independent films in particular and just haven't had the opportunity to do so. And that's exactly what their show is going to do. So in the next month or so, be looking for some promotions from our social media to talk about where you can subscribe to Indie Spotlight by the Front Row Network. And just excited to get Kimmy and Ethan involved. I've known Ethan for a long, long time. Really excited to get his take on movies, particularly on Minari, as this is a film that we're really looking at for the Oscars moving forward. And I've never met Kimmy, but just from listening to a couple of their episodes that they've already done and they've already put in the can, this is going to be a show to listen to all the time whenever they bring it to you. So without further ado, this is the Front Row Network's first taste at Indie Spotlight, a full disclosure on Minari. And again, we'll let you know when everything else is released and where you can go and find more Ethan and Kimmy from here on out.
Hey, everybody. This is the Indie Spotlight Podcast, part of the Front Row Movie Review Network. Sponsored by NPR Illinois. My name is Ethan Fance.
My name is Kimmy Schofield.
And we are here to discuss the Best Picture nominee, Minari. Interestingly, another Korean film nominated the second year in a row for Best Picture. Unfortunately, I think that that means it has 0% chance to win.
Very fair assumption. Probably an accurate assumption. Not a fair.
No, but we do live in America, and it's, you know, using historical data, I think I can accurately predict that this is not going to be the winner. I have also watched, I think, 7 of the 8 or 9 nominees for Best Picture in the past week. And I, even if it wasn't for like the like political aspect of it being Korean film, I don't think it's the best film of the year.
Okay. I haven't watched that many yet of the others, but it's more than just the formula of Oscar.
Correct. Okay. I do think that this movie is good. I'm not sure how original of a story it tells relative to others like it. Not that it isn't a story that's told well, and not that there aren't interesting characters and dynamics. I certainly think there are. But I think when it stacks up to different movies, especially movies that deal a lot with the current like racial climate, like Charles Chicago 7.
Yeah.
Charles Chicago 7 and Judas and the Black Messiah, both dealing with political events in Chicago, both dealing with Fred Hampton to an extent, Fred Hampton being the leader of the Black Panther Party in Chicago, among other things. So those two, because of their current political climate and how relevant they are, I think are going to be a little bit higher. And then Nomadland being the darling of the Oscar season. Have you seen Nomadland?
No, I've only seen it everywhere, though.
And
so much about it. Not that it's not good. I bet it's wonderful. I just haven't gotten to it yet.
So Sunday, I will be on a different podcast. One that's kind of like, it's like the Avengers version of the Front Row Movie Review Network, where each person who like is on a podcast is coming to this main one. And each one has been assigned one Best Picture nominee to defend as to why it should win.
Okay.
I was assigned Minari, so I've got some of my work
That's
cut out for
me. Okay. I'll help you.
But we have like a thread going where each person's talking about all the movies, and Nomadland has been very divisive amongst the crew. Some people loving it, some people absolutely hating it. We'll see what happens.
Who organized it? Did they get Nomadland?
No, I don't believe they did.
It wasn't rigged. Right.
No, because I think the person who organized it, I don't know if they hate it, but I think they're lukewarm on it.
Okay.
Biggest criticisms of it being it has no plot, which like isn't totally fair. It is a story about a person and people and doesn't necessarily
have... There is some cohesion to it.
Yes. There's stuff happening and people experiencing things. And sometimes I think that gets lost in the weeds. But we're not here to talk about Nomadland.
Talk about Minari.
We're talking about Minari. Not really available for free anywhere. You can find it. You can rent it on YouTube, Amazon, any on-demand service. Minari is about a Korean family who immigrated. I don't know if they gave us the specific time in the movie. It seemed like the 80s, right?
I felt like probably late 80s.
Yeah. Certainly after the Korean War, because that's referenced tangentially in there as well. But yeah, this family that had been living in California for a while and then was moving to Arkansas to start anew, figure out a way to kind of build up wealth and equity for their family as to not rely on chicken sexing for long-term monetary gain. As far as actors and actresses that I recognize in this, Steven Yeun, who I had seen in The Walking Dead, and amongst other things, usually very good in everything I see him in. And then Will Patton.
Will Patton.
Who some of you may recognize from Remember the Titans as the football coach opposite Denzel Washington. Mm-hmm. Nearly unrecognizable in his role in this film as the crazy guy, basically.
He definitely, they judge him and he comes across as possibly not being stable, but he is delightful.
No, he's great in this movie. Yeah, an extremely positive character, maybe, but also teetering on unstable. Mm-hmm. And it's unclear or not whether or not him being in the war had anything to do with that. I think it's kind of inferred that it may have had an effect on him. But anyway, what did you think about this movie?
I really liked it. I've read a couple of reviews that describe it, as well as the director describing it almost as tender.
Sure.
Which I would agree with. The first thing that I really noticed was the score.
Okay.
And I actually looked into it, and I think Emil Monseri, I believe.
Monseri, something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He did the music for it, and he actually had come up with some ideas for it before the movie was being made. Mm-hmm. And then the director ended up loving it. And so they kept a lot of the original stuff that he had created, and kind of going with the themes of the whole movie, like the color scheme and stuff. I feel like the colors are really just kind of natural, so they don't overpower the space or anything. And the music also is kind of organic and it doesn't overpower anything within the film. It just adds to it. And I just thought it was beautiful.
I would agree with that. Yeah, for sure.
And the end song is sung by the actress who plays Monica.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, they wrote it. I think then somebody wrote a poem for it, adapted the music into a poem, and then translated it into Korean. Mm-hmm. And then they had that actress sing it.
That's awesome.
Which I love. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I thought it was lovely. Definitely a family just trying to succeed. Lots of themes that you could find. And sure. Alan and him, the 7-year-old son, I thought was just wonderful.
Quite adorable. Also, but like maddening at times too. You're just like,
oh yeah.
Come like on, man. Cool. Just figure it out. All right.
Figure it out. Grandma loved Yoon Yoo Jung, I think is her name. And she's brilliant.
Yeah. She's great. I did like this movie. I think it was an interesting conflict for every person in the family. Like everyone was both right and wrong in their pursuits of what they were looking for. Mm-hmm. I think the only one that like was kind of unimpeachable was the daughter. The daughter at all times was kind of like doing the right thing or trying to help in the right way.
And the mom even points out that she's, you know, she's so young and she's helping the mother.
He's helping her, yeah.
And I wondered if the daughter was going to have kind of more of a role, a more prominent role, or be more of a vessel for anything.
Or just have like some sort of internal conflict or something like that. Yeah.
I don't know that she needed to. And I don't know if that was just a reflection of the creators, well, the director, Lee Isaac Chung, if it was reflective of his story, because a lot of this is based off of or influenced by his actual childhood.
Okay.
Or if it was just, you know, the female roles, especially of families at that time and immigrant families, especially being more subdued.
Mm-hmm.
That the daughter is, although the mother definitely speaks her mind and is more of a partner in everything. Ultimately, yes. Maybe not. Yeah. Start.
For sure. To quickly go over the nominations that this movie has garnered for the Oscars. It has 6. Mm-hmm. Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actress for Monica, mm-hmm. Best Original Screenplay. The director was also the writer of the screenplay, Lee Isaac mm-hmm. Chung. Best Actor for Steven Yeun, and Best Original Score, which we already discussed.
Love the score.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that each person kind of was both looking out for themselves while under the guise of doing it for the family. But I think mm-hmm. each person kind of had personal motivations for why they were doing what they were doing. The father trying to build, quote unquote, a legacy, essentially, and sacrificing other parts of the family in order to do that. The wife kind of being disdainful of the country life, coming from a city of her own and having a viewpoint on that sort of lifestyle.
That would be me.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. The son kind of wanting to buck his health problems and do whatever he wants to do. Mm. The son has a heart murmur, I guess we could say, maybe yeah. some sort of congenital heart condition. It's
they
never
call
really
it a heart murmur, and they also say there's a hole in his heart at some point.
Yes. They didn't really ever go into the specifics of what the diagnosis was, but kid has 7 years old, has a heart problem, can't really run or do any sort of physical activity without having complications. The grandma is just absolutely out of this world. it's unclear like how she showed up or what, like, I guess the mom just reached out to her and was like, hey, come hang out with us in Arkansas.
Yeah.
But she's there to just kind of be a babysitter almost while the parents go to work. Mm-hmm. But is a very non-traditional maternal figure in the family. Yeah. Very much has a childlike spirit to her.
As David says, you're not a real grandma.
Not a real, says it. Like 17 times up until the very end.
Yeah.
And the, yeah, then the daughter just kind of there is the shining light for everyone mm-hmm. else to kind of just hold on to.
Yeah.
I did look up what the metaphor for the Minari was, because I was like, this means something. And I couldn't quite place it. Did you know it just from watching the movie, what it meant?
I had guessed, but then I also looked up the actual plant, the Minari, mm-hmm. to figure it out. And upon reading what it does and its characteristics, I said, oh, mm-hmm. this makes a lot of sense.
Indeed. For the listening audience who hasn't looked up what the term Minari is or what it actually is or why it was used in this film or what it's representative of, Minari is generally speaking is able to grow its most in its second season. So after its first season, it doesn't grow that much. It dies and then comes back, has a rebirth, even stronger, which is indicative of this family, mm-hmm. Both of the son.
And it's Korean.
And it's Korean, yes. It's Korean in origin. The family having everything burned down, essentially, and mm-hmm. kind of showing them what is important to them and kind of making those bonds stronger for the future. Both for yeah. the grandma, the son, the parents, everyone. The son comes back stronger with a stronger heart. The husband and wife come back understanding that their bond is stronger than whatever other kind of stuff that they have going on at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think the grandma also kind of has an awakening when the son finally calls her a real grandma at yeah. the end, too. It's unclear to me, too, for the grandma. So the grandma has a stroke halfway through the film.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming towards the end, even though she's not physically able or physically 100%, her mental faculties seem to be pretty intact. Like she understood what was going on around here towards the end relative to when she, right after she had the stroke. Like right after she had the stroke, she was just having visions, not really yes. knowing what was going on around her. Did you kind of pick up or do you think that like she was aware emotionally and like intellectually what was going on at the end?
I go back and forth because at first I thought yes, because it was obviously that she was trying to do helpful things toward the end that backfired, and but essentially then allowed for rebirth and regrowth. The very end, though, where she is seen just watching the family sleep, that point I wondered, is this where she is now leaving us and she's just a presence in their life and overseeing them, or is she fully aware that she did something wrong and she is now separated from the family? Either way, I do think that, I guess, yes, generally she is still emotionally aware. I would hope that she also knew that David and the dad,
Jacob.
Okay, Jacob decided to plant Minari at the creek where she initially wanted to do that anyway at the start, just kind of honoring her.
So I think she did plant it there.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. So that was its rebirth. That was its second season coming in.
Well, perfect. I hope she knows that they went back and that it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure that. So I guess to discuss the plot point, she ends up burning down the storehouse of all the produce accidentally. So with that throughout the movie, they burn their trash in like this oil drum, essentially sort of thing. She ends up kind of filling it up too much. And one of the crates that's burning falls onto the ground, catches fire, fire spreads to the storehouse, burns down all the produce that they'd been growing. Right. And the family is driving back home as this is happening. They run in to try to save as much food as they can, or I guess Jacob does. Monica follows in. She almost passes out from the smoke. He ends up leaving all the food and taking her out, which I think is reestablishing for him that she is more important than this farm that he is trying to grow. Yeah, I guess I didn't really pick up on some of the stuff you talked about at the end.
I don't know that I'm right.
I'm not saying that you're not. I think I really only saw that like that family was like bonded at the end. Like they were all together. It was interesting that she wasn't, that she was looking at it. I didn't know if that was representative of us observing them or if it was a fracturing of the family. I don't know.
It was probably not the latter. Because I do think that it's a more hopeful ending. There wasn't really a time throughout the film that I felt overly sad or anything, which I think was one of the points that I'll talk about in a second. But I think, yeah, with the burning down and the significance of Minari, I think that it was definitely less of a fracturing and probably more of hopeful. Okay, now we can move forward and we've overcome a lot of struggles, especially already being immigrants in the United States and then moving to a trailer in Arkansas.
Speaking of immigrants in the 80s in a very white community, when they went to church, and that little girl came up to, I forget the daughter's name, but she just starts saying Anna, random. I don't know. I guess we can look this up. I'll look it up as I'm talking. And she just starts saying random foreign words that she thinks are part of it. Like, I have to imagine that that happens all the time. Right?
I would imagine probably yes. I still, though, I think my jaw literally dropped because I was already irritated that the boy went up to the son and asked him why
he had a flat face.
So flat.
Yeah.
And then the girl said, tell me when I say something in your language.
But like, I honestly think that probably happens all the time to immigrants.
It probably does. And they made the Caucasian children who attended the church regularly, they made them come across as more just innocent children, I guess, like naive rather than being overtly racist, which they were being and just were unaware of it.
Correct. And like, it makes me kind of think too, like, I probably did some stupid stuff like that when I was 8.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You did. You talked about it in one of the other episodes.
Yeah. Tune into the episode about One Night in Miami. You may hear a story about how I was dumb. Nothing new for me necessarily. Constantly being a big dumb idiot. It's fine.
You've grown.
We've all grown. you know?
Yeah, that's very true.
That was, yeah, so that was a moment I was like, yeah, that's just probably real. This is just a real thing that happens all the time. One scene that kind of stuck out to me is, I don't know if it was misplaced, but I didn't really get anything out of it, was the sleepover scene that he had. And then, like, the dad, specifically that morning after that breakfast. I didn't know if that scene was just purposely there to, like, inform David of how Jacob might be struggling or what was kind of going on there. I wish that either, like, that father had come back in some way later in the movie or something like that. I don't know. It was just a scene that kind of felt a little out of place for me.
I agree. And I think there were a couple of times throughout the film that I, again, which maybe this is just what I expect in movies, thought that there was going to be greater conflict than there was. And I was reading an interview that the director had where he talked about his influences for the film and in general his influences and processes about writing the story. And one thing that he talked about was there's, I think it's a poem about kind of the hunters versus the gatherers, where the story of the hunter is going to be much more interesting because there's going to be more action and everything, but without the gatherer part of the story, how can the community hold together? How can the story even exist? And I think that he probably went more with the gatherer approach, where this was just a story, and that's fine, and that's okay, and it was still beautiful. But yeah, I wondered, like, when Will Patton's character was carrying the cross, when he was walking home, and there are two times where they stop and they look, and the family is like, what is this guy doing carrying a cross down the road? And like you said, he may have been traumatized by the war or something, and this is what he does, but that's his version of church. And it's not explained. And then I was actually happy that it wasn't explained, because I was kind of worried that he was going to turn into the white savior when he showed up initially in the film and was going to help with just getting the farm going and saying that he's really great. I was glad that he didn't take over and save the farm or fix the farm. He was just a grateful additional neighborhood kind of interesting man.
It's unclear where he lives or anything like that. I do agree that I'm glad that they didn't really explain. I think it helps that you kind of have to build your own inferences on it or ideas about who he is, what happened to him. And I think that's fine. I think, yeah, what you're talking about with the lack of conflict and that it just kind of being a story about people, like, I think that that's something that I would like to see more in movies, honestly. Just sort of like real life stuff. I think that's both why Nomadland is being acclaimed and criticized so heavily, is because it is just, again, a story about people. And I don't know why people don't like that. I think maybe it makes them feel, it makes them sit and think about their own lives maybe too much. Like, it's not a distraction. It's more of a, it brings you into real life rather than takes you out of it. I mean, not that there wasn't kind of like their whole life almost burns down, right?
So,
like,
yes, absolutely. Yeah. And the mother has to adjust to this life that she doesn't want, that even though she is confident and speaks her mind, she's there because the father wanted her to be there, which, again, families, especially then, and immigrant families, the male's usually going to be the person who takes charge. So I liked that they came together at the end when she kind of confirms to him, yeah, let's do this. Set down the rock where the water is. Now we're doing it this way because your way didn't work.
I also loved the Mountain Dew thing, water from the mountain. It's great.
I've never had Mountain Dew, but
you've never had Mountain Dew? How's that even possible?
My mother drank Pepsi growing up, and I don't know. It wasn't until I moved to Champaign, Illinois, that I was bartending, and people asked all the time for mixed drinks with Mountain Dew. And I,
well, that's not normal either, but
okay, well, good. When it showed up and he says, no, it's water from the mountains, it's good for you. I said, no, don't drink this.
Well, you gotta have Mountain Dew. It's also, okay, hold on. We gotta try new things, even just a sip, it's fine. Okay. You won't die. All right.
I'll try it.
Especially because Taco Bell has their own version of Mountain Dew, and Taco Bell is great. So
people are obsessed with that too, and I don't.
Yeah.
I
well, don't we'll have it together sometime. It'll be fine.
All right. Cool.
But yeah, no. So Pepsi owns Mountain Dew too. So like,
I know
they're already in the family.
Do you know that?
Yeah.
Do you know
so that? It's almost like it's already in your bloodstream. You just haven't actually had it yet.
Gotta bring it back. Mm-hmm. One thing that I also liked that I found out was the. And again, this was an interview with the director, writer. He talked about how during breaks, this was the first movie that he had this kind of budget. Mm-hmm. And he still was trying to, at some points, it was hard for him to kind of accept that he had this budget and these capabilities. Mm-hmm. And he himself said that that could be reflective also of immigrants coming to America and acknowledging that they might have more opportunities. I, again, throughout the movie, just kept thinking, man, people really just think that America is going to just give them the American dream and it's going to be easy. And I feel so bad for people who mm-hmm. have those expectations because America is not like that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the grandmother, the actress, she wants to get everything right on her first take, which I very much respect. And on their off days and breaks, a lot of times the director would go to the Airbnb where she and the actor who played Monica were staying. And he said it was just like a nice little escape and oasis. And I thought that was lovely because they were such strong female characters in the film mm-hmm. and almost hard-headed, which I loved. Mm-hmm. And then they could just go back and give this director, who this is his first huge, huge movie, mm-hmm. some nice peace.
Yeah. That's awesome. I also thought the grandma as an actress was the most, I feel like a lot of her stuff was kind of improvised, which I liked mm-hmm. too, even though she was trying to do it in one take. It seemed like not all of it was scripted.
I'll agree.
Yeah, which I thought was cool.
Her facial expressions and her reactions and even her reaction to David, her grandchild, mm-hmm. who does not accept her, does not want her to be a part of the family. The second that anything comes to kind of discipline him for just, I mean, he makes her drink.
Yeah, let's talk about this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He tricks his grandma into drinking pee, trying to tell her it's Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
Also, what is this? This kid's pee is like neon green. What's going on with this kid here?
I'll be from the Mountain Dew.
Yeah, I know.
And the dad wants to resort to punishment and tells him to go and get a stick.
Also a nice moment, yes.
He breaks the first stick that is the kind of...
The switch.
Resident switch, is that what mm-hmm. we call it? Okay. So he goes out to get another one, and the grandma the whole time, who is just, you know, she got there and David said he doesn't like her. She's not a real grandma. He judges her for not baking cookies.
And saying bad words and all this other stuff.
Makes her drink his own pee. She says, why would you punish this sweet child? Yeah. loved. And then he comes back with just a little piece of grass and mm-hmm. she's very proud of him and tells him how clever he is. And I thought that was a really nice moment. But again, yes, her facial expressions and her responses and everything, she was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, once she had the stroke, I was like, oh, okay, this is turning into a different movie. Like, this isn't just going to be kind of like a happy-go-lucky family trying to figure out how to navigate America. Like, there's going to be some real problems here. They were setting you up for the, like, the medical thing to be the kid, right? At some point, mm-hmm. he was going to have to get rushed to the emergency room or something like that, which never happens, which was great. So it was kind of like a switcheroo a little bit there. the scene where the kid is talking about scared of dying. He's kind of has that overarching fear kind of instilled in him by his mom a little bit. I didn't have that same like one-for-one experience, but as a kid I also was very scared of death.
Were you really?
Like under 10 years old.
Did you pray about not dying?
I don't think so. I think I just kept imagining an endless and dark void as an 8-year-old. Mm-hmm. Which is a lot to process as an 8-year-old.
It was a lot to process when we talked about it 10 years ago, Ethan.
True.
But as a child, I couldn't imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, that was a thing that was very relatable to me. I didn't have like a heart condition or anything, so there was no reason for me to be thinking about this stuff. But I was, and I was like, "Oh,
first.
I get it. I get it, kid. I'm with you. I understand." So yeah, that was probably like the only thing that I could like actually relate to, from an empathetic standpoint.
Did you have the only thing I could relate to was the grandma, but it was only because I was very close with my grandmother, and she definitely didn't fit kind of the traditional role of a grandmother. She swore all the time. She banned people from our house who talked back to her. She Fantastic. Was great. I'm basically her, but I was otherwise even kind of the, and again, I know the father was doing all of these things to try to help his family, but I still felt like probably more so with David and the mother, since she constantly is debating whether she should leave or not, that there was an absence of the father. Did either of your parents, were they present all the time? Did any of them work to the point where you noticed any sort of absence at all?
Ish. Like my dad worked nights for a long time as an air traffic controller.
What?
Yeah. My dad's an air traffic controller.
Know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Just one of those stressful jobs.
I mean, stressful, yes, but you're like at Springfield and that airport, there's not a lot of planes coming in and out of there. And it was, so it wasn't like it was the job he had to do in order to support the family. I don't think he was ever like overreaching for like his own legacy necessarily. Yeah. But eventually he started working days, and then my mom also started working days. She was a stay-at-home mom for a while she was earning her master's degree. And then she got a job as a librarian, and then he was working full time as a supervisor. So then they both kind of worked regular, normal hours. Mm-hmm. By the time I was in high school, we were all kind of on different schedules. So I was kind of doing my own thing. They were doing their own thing. So there wasn't a lot of community time for people. I don't think anything was intentional. But yeah, I mean, there were certainly moments where, people weren't around.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
No, my mother worked because it was my mother and my grandmother. And so my mother worked during the day and I was just home with my grandmother all the time. But our cousins always lived, 5 to 10 minutes away. So we just always had a full house. So I didn't really feel an absence or anything. But inevitably, I just kind of consciously or not, when I watch movies, start to think, oh, yeah, I can relate to this or that or the other thing. And there wasn't anything that really took me out of the movie to make me say, I don't relate to any of this. But looking back on it afterward, I've never farmed. I've never moved across the country to somewhere where I absolutely don't want to go or had any sort of serious medical condition. So, but that I still enjoyed the movie a lot. I thought it was a nice story to watch and to see the story of a family and an immigrant family come in from California where the mother lived and having to come south. I said, no, thank you, Arkansas, when they moved there because.
Yeah, the worst place in America, pretty much.
I've been to the Ozarks.
Sorry, Arkansas.
Arkansas. I'm sure parts of you are beautiful, but
Walmart's there, so that's a thing. I know that.
There you go. I couldn't. I would have a very difficult time. Very difficult time.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the only other thing I can kind of relate to is like my parents are pretty strict when I was a kid too.
Oh yeah.
Discipline was short leash on that. Talk back. Bad idea. Things are going to happen. All that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
What else was I going to say? Oh, talking about like immigrating and the American dream. I think more as I learn and as much retrospection as I can get on what was actually going on in America and then what wasn't just the propaganda of the American dream. I don't feel like it's ever been good for immigrants. It wasn't ever good.
No.
Yeah.
I agree completely. And I am grateful that I grew up here with some opportunities that I have that might be restricted other places, but I don't know many immigrant families who came over here and were able to even do the same things, same jobs, or live in the same size home that they were in other places. And even some of the, there's some doctors, dentists, and veterinarians who I know, and they got their degree elsewhere, and then they came over to the States. And I'm sure that some of the things are different and they have to relearn some things, but you basically have to go back to school completely.
Yep, 100%.
And when I worked at an animal shelter, we would have veterinarians from other countries apply all the time for basic positions. And they would ask, not they, the management would ask my opinion. And I said, I think they will get horribly bored because they are incapable of getting a job as a veterinarian because of the restrictions here. But that doesn't mean that they are not qualified.
Right.
It just means that
they're really qualified
here. And I would be bored if I did something less that didn't work my brain as much, wanting to do what I studied for and have a degree in. And I mean, I'm sure some people have had great experiences, but yeah, the propaganda of the American dream, I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like, I don't want to like diminish what conditions people may have came from in order to get here.
No.
But like, wasn't probably awesome when they got here. Like, they probably ran into
a lot of...
They still
had to keep going through a lot of struggles and trauma to try to overcome. Yeah. I see it on 90 Day Fiancé when I watch it too.
Oh, gross.
And I know a lot of people come to the States from other countries and then they can't work and they're bored. And I would be bored too if I couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
Because of limitations. So, again, happy that I have an education and grew up here and can work here.
Indeed. But
I wish that it was more directly explained about what you have to do once you get here.
Yeah. And I think the internet has made it better for some accessibility, but worse because people can then spread horrible things about immigrants on the internet and it's more readily available. If you're, again, the internet, if you're looking for something, you can find it, right?
Yeah.
You can reinforce any opinion. Anyway, I don't know that I have much more to talk about.
I don't know that I have much more either.
I think it was a fine film.
Fine film.
Definitely worthy of consideration for the acclaim that it's getting. An interesting story, for sure.
Didn't realize that it was Korean American when I started it.
Oh, you just thought it was full Korean?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, I mean, immediately they're in Arkansas.
Correct.
And there are subtitles, which don't bother me at all. But if you're someone who gets easily distracted or something,
let's talk about this for a second.
Okay.
People out there who are listening, get over it. Subtitles are going to expose you to an entire world
of
culture and content that's going to be great for you to consume. Not least of which,
away from anything.
No. Starting with Parasite last year, it won Best Picture and was mostly subtitled.
Mm-hmm.
So, just got to get over it.
Get over it.
Americans,
as a child,
the whole world
watched Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and followed the plot with subtitles.
Yes. Speaking of other subtitled movies to keep an eye out for this year, on Hulu, people should go check out Another Round.
Okay.
It's a Danish film.
I've seen a Danish film with subtitles recently that I love.
There you go. The main actor everyone should probably recognize, Mads Mikkelsen. You've seen him in a lot of things.
He was in the movie that I was going to talk
about. Are we just talking about the same movie?
No, we're not.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
Okay, great. Another Round is essentially a midlife crisis movie where a bunch of teachers are kind of in a rut, high school teachers, and figuring out ways to kind of elevate their life experiences. And one of them brings up a study that he found that a psychologist did, saying that people are generally better capable if their blood alcohol level is at a certain level, like consistently, like at a 0.04 or 0.05. So then they basically run their own trials of this experiment. Like, what is their life like if they are constantly buzzed? And then some people end up taking it too far. And yeah, the movie's great. I really, really enjoyed it. Wow. But yes, it is completely subtitled. So again, get over it.
Get over it.
All right, America.
You can do it.
Heard it here first. Well, not really. You heard it here the 13th time.
Reinforced here. No. My Mads Mikkelsen movie is called The Hunt, and I saw it on Netflix in like 2015, maybe.
Oh, okay. So not like yesterday.
No, yeah. Yesterday. Just Danish subtitles, Mads Mikkelsen.
Mm-hmm. Mads Mikkelsen, he's great.
He's wonderful.
Yeah. He was recently, he did a actors on actors. I forget who does it. But it was him and Daniel Craig had like a reunion from the Casino Royale days, talking about the movies that they were in. Yeah, I guess I also didn't realize like, that Mads Mikkelsen, does like a lot of stuff, a lot of Danish films, like primarily does Danish stuff. And he's, I don't know if he's better, but he's as good, if not better, in the Danish films than he is in the American films.
Mm-hmm.
So, wonderful. Highly recommend. I guess we can close it out with the coffee cup test, which we didn't do again this week because we forgot.
We kind of talked about it.
We talked about scenes that we thought didn't make sense.
Said I didn't feel like I got too distracted by too many things.
No, I didn't hear that.
But now I'm trying to think of other stuff.
Yeah, I also don't think there was anything that really no
this movie checks out. I know we started talking about other stuff and about how there's not, you know, a crazy amount of wild intense conflict, but that doesn't mean it's not a good movie. It's a good movie.
Yeah. If you're looking for wild and intense conflicts, go watch Promising Young Woman, another Best Picture nominee for this year. Really good. Wildly entertaining. Got a lot of, if people have seen Gone Girl, got some Gone Girl vibes.
I'm not a Gone Girl fan. That's what that sound was.
Why?
I read the books.
Okay.
And I didn't love them.
Okay.
And that's it. I just didn't love it. I thought it was kind of cheap. I feel like cheap is a cheap word. Sure. But I feel like a lot of it just played off of this extremely outlandish scenario that who are you supposed to feel bad for? I don't know. I just didn't like it. Didn't like any of the characters.
None of the characters are likable. And that's kind of what's interesting about it to me.
They're not likable, but they're not likable to a point where it makes me also just not like the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay. Like Don Draper, not likable. Love
Still Matt. Like the story. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Got it. Yeah. Makes sense. So I would recommend checking out the film. It is a David Fincher film.
Oh, I will.
So it has an interesting David Fincher vibe to it as well.
Love David Fincher.
And I think Ben Affleck and what's her name? Rosamund Pike are both really, really good in it. And Neil Patrick Harris is in it. He's fine. But everyone likes Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah, he is in it.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, just in the way that she is very calculated with her decision making, this woman is also very calculated in everything she does. And so that was the comparison I kind of drew from it.
Okay.
It is.
I'll still watch it.
It's kind of outlandish, not super outlandish, but kind of outlandish. But still definitely recommend checking it out. The general premise is, and this isn't really a spoiler, because it's you find out in the first 5 minutes, her friend went through a sexual assault scenario, and she is now taking it upon herself to kind of put herself in harm's way by pretending to be drunk and vulnerable, and then being violent towards the people that are trying to take advantage of her.
And it's Carey Mulligan, right?
It is Carey Mulligan.
I look forward to seeing that then, because I feel like she often plays a more meek role or comes across.
Yes, this is not that at all. And she does a really, really good job.
I will watch it. Yeah. And if anybody wants to watch Gone Girl, they can watch it. But
Kimmy is not preventing you from watching Gone Girl.
Just know that I'm more excited to watch Promising Young Woman for
yes. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, no, check both of them out. Promising Young Woman, I think you also have to rent, but I believe it's only $5 on YouTube. Oh, wow.
Okay.
I rented it on YouTube. Yeah, definitely check
it. I didn't realize that it came out in the Netherlands first. Because isn't it Bo Burnham and Alison Brie are in this movie too, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. No idea.
Yeah, Bo Burnham's awesome in this movie too.
Bo Burnham.
Mm-hmm. and the one critique I have of that movie, just because we're talking about it, there is a character in the movie, for those who have seen New Girl, the show.
I've seen that show.
Fantastic. The guy who plays Schmidt, Max Greenfield.
Yeah.
Is also in this movie. And he plays a character almost too close to the personality of Schmidt that it was like, oh, that's just Schmidt being over the top. A little coffee cup. Yes. Example. Because like the scenes that he's in are a little more serious than I felt that he was doing. And that's probably just because of my preconceived notions of him being Schmidt rather than what he was actually doing in the scene. So that's probably on me more than anything else. But anyway,
that's good movie.
Check it out. I think that's about it for me. Yes. We want to thank you once again for spending an amount of time with us talking about movies. We will be back again to talk about something.
It's probably going to be another movie.
It's probably going to be another movie. If I had to guess, it's going to be another movie. Can't wait.
Some anecdotes.
Probably some personal anecdotes thrown in there. It seems to be our brand.
I think that's all right.
Yeah. We figured out a brand within like, you know, 3 episodes. So that's pretty good.
Look
at this. Yeah.
You'll only get better, maybe.
Maybe. Who's to say? But yeah, I want to thank you guys. My name again is Ethan Fance.
Kimmy Schofield.
And this is the Indie Spotlight Podcast. And we will see you again next time to talk about something else. All right. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio Illinois. For more from the Front Row Network, including our articles or our other dozens of shows, visit thefrontrownetwork.com or nprillinois.org/programs/frontrownetwork. You can also find us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and on Twitter @FrontRowReviews with a Z.